Good morning, gentlemen. We are in Isru Hal. We are still connected to Hada Sukkot, this last day. So we just want to take a few minutes to take something with us from the Hada Sukkot into the year. As you know, Hada Sukkot is a celebration that Am Yisrael was given by the Creator of the world to celebrate one of the great miracles that we had in the Midbar, in the desert. In the desert, the Jewish people were there for 40 years. That's a very long time. 40 years, day and night, consecutively. They needed water. They needed food. They had miracles every day. The man that fell from Shamayim, from heaven, that was their food. The well of Miriam was their water, a traveling well that accompanied them. They had constant supply of good water. And then there were these clouds of glory. These clouds basically surrounded the Jewish people during their travel in the desert. And they made their life very comfortable. When it was hot, they were provided air conditioning. When it was cold, they provided heating. Their clothing got laundered while it was on them. The clouds were able to make that happen. They made the travel a little easier, straightened out the hills. It's coming in front of them. This is one of the miracles that we experienced for 40 years in the travels of the desert. The Anane Kavod. Sukkot was given to us as a holiday to commemorate these clouds. The famous question that's asked by many great rabbis is that we find a celebration for this miracle while we don't find any holiday for the other miracles. We have 7 days to celebrate the Anane Kavod and not even one day to celebrate the man and not one day to celebrate the Be'er of Miriam. If miracles are a reason to celebrate and commemorate and to gain something from it, so why does there seem to be more of a focus on the clouds of glory than food and water? That is the question of the Mabit and many others that ask this question. There are a number of answers to this question. I like to say a very simple answer. When someone provides me bread and provides me water, I see that they are concerned about my physical well-being. I see they're concerned about my survival. Because without bread and without water, as a human being, I cannot exist. So someone who's kind to provide me bread and water shows they care that I survive physically in this world, which obviously is a tremendous kindness. There are people who give food to families, provide basic needs. It's a wonderful tzedakah, wonderful charity, wonderful kind. But what are they giving the person? They're giving the person something lacking in their physical survival. When it comes to the clouds, what's interesting about those clouds is that they are not necessary. Meaning, they couldn't have survived without the man. And they couldn't have survived without the water. But they could have survived without the clouds. If they were cold, it's okay, they'll figure it out. La'alenu, people have been in very difficult circumstances for a long time, and they figured it out. It wasn't the most comfortable, but it worked. Yeah, we just had the hostages, Baruch Hashem, released. What they went through for 2 years. You can't even imagine that we could survive one day that way. But they survived. Barely, but they did survive. So a person can have food and water, and he's surviving. One day it's too hot, so it's too hot that day. It's not comfortable. One day it's too cold. Maybe you have to climb the hills. If your clothing gets dirty and you have to wash it and launder it, okay. It is what it is. So really the clouds were unnecessary. So what was the purpose of Hashem giving us these clouds? Based on what we're saying so far, it makes the question even bigger. That we're celebrating the unnecessary clouds while we are ignoring the key items for survival that were given to us. But the clouds were given to us not because we needed them for survival. They were given to us as a show of concern, as a show of ahava, of love. You see, when you give someone their basic needs, you don't show love. You show that you care, that they exist. But when you go beyond what's needed for survival, it shows that you care about them. And it shows that you care about how they feel. And you're going out of your way to show them that you really care about them. So when I give you basic sustenance, I care about your physical survival. But when I go out of my way for you to show you that I love you by doing things that you don't need to survive, so that gives you an emotional good feeling. It's not your physical survival, it's your emotional happiness. And when it comes to measuring what's more important, the physical well-being of the person or his emotional well-being. So believe it or not, the emotional well-being of the person is more important than his physical well-being. Physical is also important, but the emotional needs are greater. That's what the Gemara says. That if you steal from a person his hard-earned money, guy's working for years to save up money to buy a house, and you steal all his money, which is terrible. But if you belittle him, if you embarrass him, if you make him feel not so worthy, It's a greater sin when you hurt him emotionally than if you hurt him monetarily. Because the person's emotions are much more important. His happiness or his pain emotionally are more important than even physical pain. And certainly monetary pain. You lost money, it's not a good feeling. But it's worse when you feel like a zero. When you feel that nobody cares about you. One of the most important needs of a human being is to feel loved. To feel that people value him. People spend their whole life trying to get attention from others to love them. Sometimes they have such a desire for that that they don't realize how to do it right. So they go out there and they try to, because of this hunger for feeling love, they'll go out there and spend all kinds of money so people can notice them and quote unquote love them, or at least they think by being noticed that they're being loved. They equate that sometimes. They'll say all kinds of words that maybe get people to laugh. They might also mistake that for love because they're getting attention. So people will do a lot of things in life. They'll spend a lot of money. They'll go to do a lot of interesting things. They'll say interesting things. They'll go to interesting places just so they could feel that others recognize them and in their minds love them. The need for love is a basic human necessity. That without it, although the person might be surviving physically, but they're not worth much. Because such a person becomes weak emotionally, and such a person cannot really accomplish much in life. Emotional pain is greater than physical pain. And therefore, the emotional needs of the person are in a way greater than their physical needs. That's why when you go out of your way to give something, a gift to somebody that they don't need, it makes a greater impact than giving them all their necessities that you're providing for them. Could you imagine that? You've been feeding your son, your daughter for 30 years. You're giving them a place to sleep. You're giving them all the basic necessities. Now, in today's world, the basic necessities are very high. Today, what used to be an extra, today became a necessity. So sometimes buying a house for your son for $3 million is also a necessity. And maybe even more. Sometimes for certain families, going on a vacation once a year or maybe more is also a necessity. And certain clothing, certain shoes, necessity. So here you are providing the necessities for a person that you care about. All of those necessities may be important, but not necessarily the person feels loved because you gave them the necessity. It could be you love them, but not necessarily they feel it. Because in their eyes, they're getting their necessity, so you care about their survival. Maybe they see it as your obligation that they should survive. So they, here you are giving them food, drinks, a place to sleep, clothing, all the necessities, quote unquote. He even bought them a house. And all they feel is someone who cares about their physical survival. But do you love me? Sometimes, all you have to do is on your way home, go out of your way 3 blocks and buy them a donut for $2 that they really like, and you bring it home. That donut could be worth more than all the necessities you gave them. You say to yourself, I should buy them a donut for $2. Spending millions of dollars on this guy. What is the donut going to do? A person might feel almost insulted that to show that I love you, I got to get you a $2 donut. When I have invested so many years and so much money and it's continuing. But that's the secret of reaching a person's emotional needs. When you give them basic necessities, again, their job is to see in the basic necessities that you love them. That's their job. A person should also appreciate someone who gives them their basic necessities and see the love in that too. But I'm talking now reality. The reality by most people is when they get their necessities, they don't feel the love. They feel the care for their survival. As long as I'm breathing and as I'm walking and as I'm able to do physical things, then you're good. But do you care about me? Do you think that I am valuable? My happiness, my emotional well-being. When do I see that? Clearly, by the $2 donut. The $2 donut clearly was not a need for survival. You didn't have to get it for me. So why did you get me the donut? For what reason did you go out of your way and get me that donut? Let's think. There's only one reason. Because you actually care about how I feel. And you know that this would make me happy. So you care about my happiness. That registers. Feeling loved is received usually by the extras, by the unnecessary. Sometimes wealthy people have a harder time showing love to their children than poorer people. You have to keep that in mind. I'll tell you why. Obviously, they didn't listen to this class. But what happens when you're a wealthy person is, Baruch Hashem, thank God, you're able to provide your children with so many things that they need. Berevah, with plenty. So in your mind, as a father, what more? I give them more than any kid in the country. Look at the house they have. They have their own room. They got their own shower. They have a vacation, maybe twice a year. They have, look at the clothing now. And look at the food they're getting to eat. So in the mind of the person, look how much, because you're looking at it, how much am I giving them? And you're able to give them physically a lot of things that most people don't have, which is beautiful. You have to remember, in the eyes of that child, all those things could be in his eyes a necessity. Doesn't matter how much you spent, it's all necessity. He needs a house, he needs clothing, he needs this, he needs that. Now, the guy who can't afford much, he's not going to be able to provide his son or daughter with physical things. He can't, he doesn't have the money. But he needs to provide them with something. He needs to provide them with love. And he'll never be able to replace love with physical things because it doesn't have the wherewithal. So what does he do? He does it with emotional love. He has to because he has no choice. I'm not saying he's better. I'm just telling you that the reality of his inability to provide the physical needs, he'll have to find some other way of showing them love, spending more time with them, taking them places, and being with them, things that the other guy doesn't need to do. He will get them the donut for $2 because he didn't get them anything else. But what happens very often is because of that, the children feel more loved sometimes than the one who's getting so much more. Doesn't make sense if you put it on paper. Here's this kid who got so much more than this other guy. Could it be that guy feels more loved? And in many situations, yes. Because you can't, no matter how much you give, if it's in the sustenance box, it still may not reach their emotional necessity of feeling loved. You're taking care of their needs, their basic, quote-unquote, needs in their mind. That's all basic. Whatever you think you're giving, basic. The other guy doesn't have much in the basic department. So he tells them how much he loves them. He buys them a donut here and there. He takes them somewhere here and there. He has to be able to provide love in a different way. Basic needs usually do not translate by the recipient as love. It's a reality that we find in this world that many, 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 believe it or not, many children do not feel loved by their parents. Many, not like one or two. Many, a very big percentage of children don't feel loved by their own parents who clearly love them. That's not the point. Of course you love them. The question is, do they feel it? Basic necessities usually don't provide that translation for them. They don't translate it that way. But the donut, that's big. Same way in a marriage. When a person is providing their physical obligations, their needs, the sustenance of the other person doesn't always translate as ahava. Baruch Hashem, guy says, I give my wife every day whatever she needs. She buys clothing that she needs. She buys all the food she provides. She needs help, I get her the help. I get her, I got a nice house. What more do I need to do? The donut, whatever that donut is, way cheaper than everything else, does more, could be, than all of the money you're spending that you need to spend. But that donut has reached her in a way that nothing else does. Try it. I'm sure the great men in this room have tried it. You buy sometimes a piece of jewelry, a surprise, sometimes it's flowers, whatever it might be. Just something that you thought about, not that they need, that's extra. And you brought it into their heart. Nothing like it. All of a sudden you see them light up. Even though what you've done for the last month was way more expensive, but didn't do the same job. So in a generation that we're in, where so many of life's luxuries have become the necessity, it's become more difficult for a person to feel loved by the Creator, because he thinks everything is a necessity. Walks into his house, heating is on. Hey, heating, that's a donut. You don't need to have heat in your house. Not the way you have it. Radiant heat coming from the floors. It's okay if you're cold. 60 degrees isn't so bad. Get a blanket. So while you're a little cold, you survive with that. No, you got radiant heat. Wow. Clouds of glory. Air conditioning. You could survive without air conditioning. So it's a little hot. Talk to people from the old country. When it was hot, so they got hot. Nothing happened to them. You have air conditioning in your home. Those are the clouds of glory. But in today's generation, because of the tremendous revach that Hashem has given this world, tremendous wealth Hashem gave this world, so many of the donuts of life have turned into bagels. And now, a person is growing up with man and water. Now, it's the most miraculous man, and it's the most miraculous water. But in their brain, in their heart, they don't feel necessarily loved through them. Again, I'm not saying they're right. I'm not saying we're right. Our job is to see through it all and understand that all these things are extras. That's our job. I'm not excusing the person receiving that, oh, it's right for them not to feel love. I'm not saying that. I'm just telling you the reality of a person. See, I have a generation today that has so much, but yet feels unloved. People are in pain. People feel alone. So many people even get to the level of suicidal. So much pain that people go through today is because they don't feel loved. Perhaps that's the answer. Why Hashem gave us the clouds of glory and celebration specifically of the clouds. And not for the man and not for the water, as great as they were, as miraculous. The man was like no food, something special. No matter how special that sustenance was, but it wasn't like the clouds. The clouds of glory represent the donuts of life. And the man and water represent basic bread and water. When did Am Yisrael feel the love? When Hashem went out of his way to give him something extra. And that is the celebration of Chag HaSukkot. To feel the ahava that came through the clouds of glory and through the many clouds of glory that Hashem provides us in life. Again, unfortunately, in this generation, it's very hard to find clouds of glory anymore because of the necessity that it's become. It's very hard to find something today that Hashem can give you and you'll say, oh, wow, that was a bonus. But we need to find within our relationship with Hashem the many clouds that He gives us. Just as importantly, when it comes to relationships with other people today, our children, our spouse, our friends, our students, recognize the issue at hand. While it's their obligation to feel the love, the reality is, it's avodah, it's work. So you have to be the bigger person. And you must realize that you need to go out of your way in ways that shows the cloud clearly. And not to fall for the mistake that because I'm providing so much necessity, so of course they feel loved. This is one of the great messages to stay with us for the entire year. How to see the clouds of glory that Hashem gives us every day, which is a big challenge in our generation, and how to provide the clouds of glory for the great relationships around us. Because when you reach someone's emotion and you make them feel loved, you've given them the greatest kindness. And the relationship has been built on a much higher level. Just try it today with one person that you love. Pick up a donut for them or the equal of. Don't spend too much money. Not necessary. And you'll see a brighter person, a more powerful relationship through it all. That's the story with the clouds of glory. Feeling loved is actually one of the most important principles of bitahon. Bitahon has become a very popular subject, and rightfully so. One of the keys to life. The principle of bitahon, of course, there's a lot to talk about in that subject, but the principle, the foundation of all bitahon is that Hashem loves you. He runs the world and He loves you. Take those two pieces of information together and you come up with bitahon. If He runs the world and He loves me, so I trust that things will be good for me. If He loves me and didn't control the world, can't have bitahon. If He controls the world, doesn't love me, how do I know He'll take care? But if He loves me and He controls the world, bitahon, all good. Kol de'avid rahamana le'tav avid. Everything Hashem does for me is for the good. That's the way it works. Gam zu le'tova. How could it not be good? Hashem loves me. If He did it for me, it's good. So the basic principles of bitahon are lying on this emotional need of the person. If you feel loved by Hashem, then you'll be able to have bitahon. To know that Hashem runs the world, that's not so hard. That's intellectual. You have to open your brains a little, study things, and you'll see, obviously, God runs the world. How else are things happening? That's not so hard. But that's intellectual. For that, you need a book. You need to learn. But the other part, to feel love, that's an emotional feeling. Can't necessarily learn that from a book. A book could help you, but you need to feel love. So when you know Hashem runs the world, and you feel the clouds of glory in your life, you realize when you walk into your house, that everything there, probably most of the stuff, are extra. And you realize Hashem gave it to you. If you start to see the clouds of glory in your life, You are now ready for a life of bitachon. Because you feel love, and you know Hashem runs the world. What a combo. It's very powerful. That's what comes out of the sukkah. If a person celebrates Sukkot properly, he will feel not only the clouds. The clouds were not only supposed to feel what Hashem did for us 3,300 years ago. That's not the point of the holiday. It's to remind us of the many clouds of glory in our lives. To see them. All the extras that we don't need, but we have. Ah, you feel loved. You feel loved after Sukkot. You see Hashem runs the world. You come with a life of bitachon. As you go through your entire year with bitachon, you're a different person. That's how the sukkah builds simcha. It builds a life of simcha. Because as you have this formula, you go through your year with bitachon and happiness. Just one question I want to answer before I finish on this Isro Had. Perhaps it's a mistake that is possible to make in the world of bitachon. And I want to address it, make sure we have clarity. Because bitachon is all good. Bitachon is a life of peace of mind. It's a life of happiness. It's a life where a person feels the love of Hashem every single day. And therefore, doesn't worry. And therefore, is not afraid. And all the different issues that people have to go through in life, a Baal Bitachon is saved from all of that. So here's a question. Let's take a Baal Bitachon who is on the highest level of Bitachon. It's probably not me and you. Highest level of Bitachon means there's nobody higher. He knows Hashem runs the world clear. He feels loved the most. It's great. That's the person we need to be. So imagine the highest level Baal Bitachon. Lo aleinu ve'lo aleichem. You see him in the waiting room, outside the operating room. Very, very close loved one. So you see him in the waiting room of the OR in the hospital. You say, well, what happened? What are you doing? He says, well, I have someone very close to me, whoever it is. And the operating room doctor says, 50-50. 50-50. Question. How does a Baal Bitachon of the highest level, how does he look like in that waiting? Does he look afraid? Or does he look calm? If you tell me he looks calm, I understand. Because why is he calm? You ask him, hey, you know, you look very calm. Your father, your mother, your wife, the husband, 50-50. You know, the next hour. Mavet v'chaim. You look very calm. He tells you, it's all for the good. Hashem only does good. What am I getting nervous about? Christ. If the other guy is afraid, two guys in that room, one guy is calm, one guy is afraid. Well, the guy is afraid, yeah. You're lucky in bitachon. Tells him, why you look scared? Why are you scared? He's, I don't know what's going to happen. Scared. Usually a person is scared because they're expecting or worried that something is going to happen that they don't want to happen. He says, I don't want that to happen. And I'm scared it might happen. So I'm scared. What do you offer? So you ask him, sir, don't you know that whatever happens, Hashem does only good?
Look at that guy. I'll be Tahan. That's the question we have. What does the Baal Bitahon like? Look like in that waiting room? Does he look like the guy who's afraid? Or does he look calm? He has his headphones on. He's listening to a song, Audio Tertom, Audio Tertom. Doesn't have a... Everything is good. What does he have to be afraid of? That is the question, very important question in the world of Bitahon. Am I supposed to be afraid in that situation or am I supposed to be calm? My dear friends, this question is a very fundamental question because there are many, many people who can make a mistake. They hear so many lectures on Bitahon, all correct words on Bitahon, how much Hashem loves us and everything is for the good, you know, that when they come to a situation like that, or of course, I gave you an extreme example, but there are many examples, that they no longer are afraid. And they'll say, why should I be afraid? Hashem is only good. It's a great question. But the reality is that in that situation, you're supposed to be afraid. And if your bitahon misleads you to be calm, then you blew it. Sometimes bitahon, if you don't have it clear, may mislead you to be calm when things are rocky. Now, we have to answer the question. Bottom line, wait, Hashem runs the world and He only does good. So where would the fear come from? If I reach the top level of Baal Bitahon, where would the fear come from? If I know it's all going to be good? That is the question we need to answer. If you say you're supposed to be afraid, where would the fear come from? If I'm a Baal Bitahon, Gamzu Letova, whatever the result's going to happen is going to be good. So what am I going to do? Tell Hashem, worry about that it might be the way I don't want, but Hashem knows it's good. So whatever He knows is good, He's going to do. I'm not worried. Either way, it's good. So this is a very, very big mistake. It's a very big mistake. And here's the reason why. That everything Hashem does is for the good. That's a fact. But not all good is equal. Let me explain. Adam HaRishon was created and placed in Gan Eden. In Gan Eden, he didn't have to work. He had all of his parnasah taken care of. On the highest level, Midrash says that angels would barbecue for him. He didn't have to do shahita. He didn't have to be a farmer. Nothing. Everything. Whatever parnasah issues that people go through daily, he didn't have to even worry. He was taken care of completely. No death. No sickness. No aging, nothing. Adam HaRishon. In Gan Eden, would you say that was a good place to be in life? The best. No death, no sickness, no parnasah issues. That's everything. That was good. Hashem was good to him. The best. Adam HaRishon, on the first day of his life, he makes a terrible decision. He lowers himself and all the world with him. Hashem says to him, oh, now there's going to be death. to you, to your children. Oh, bezi'ata pecha tocha lechem. Now you have to sweat to make a living. Now, was that a good thing? Or a bad thing? When Hashem told Adam HaRishon, bezi'ata pecha tocha lechem, was that a good thing or a bad thing? Hashem only does good, but that obviously wasn't so good, because if it was the best, that's what should have been to begin with. Answer is, where Adam is holding today, he lowered his kiddusha, he lowered himself, his cup became smaller. When he was created, he was pure. The cup was much bigger. His spiritual cup was much bigger. He was able to accomplish so much more spiritually and use every minute of his life for spiritual accomplishment. In such a reality, you don't need to work. You don't need any issues. Just accomplish. When he lowered himself, his spiritual capacity became smaller. Now he has a lot of free time. He can't accomplish. He can't learn all day now. Just like many people today, they can't learn all day. Learn an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. So what about the rest of the time? What are you going to do now? Free time? Very bad. Very dangerous. So therefore, Hashem says, okay, you gave me now a smaller cup. You became a smaller cup spiritually. So the new best for you is going to be this life. Now, it would have been better if your cup would have been bigger and then you could have gotten a better good. Again, Hashem only does the best. But the best is determined by your reality. He'll always do best. But the best is what you can handle. What's best for you. Also, giving a guy lashes if he does a sin is also good for him. It gives him kapara, makes him teshuvah, whatever it does, it's also good. Killing a young kid, ben soren umoreh, it's also good for him to save him from worse things. But it's not a good for anybody who wants. It's best for the situation. I have to remember that. Whatever Hashem does is the best. But it's the best looking at where you are and how much you can handle of the good. So when a person is in a 50-50 situation, there is what to be scared of. You'll say everything Hashem does for the good. Well, yeah. Maybe right now, based on you, the best good would be the not such good 50%. But guess what? If you would upgrade yourself, if you'd make your cup bigger, now the new you is no longer the best good, that result. The result of success in that surgery now could be the best good for you. Because you're no longer that guy. In other words, it could be that based on where you are at this moment, the best result would be that the person doesn't make it. But if you would upgrade yourself, pick up some Tehillim and start to see what life needs to be, not just reading the words, even though reading is also good, but there's got to be a little more to that. You know, people think that prayer changes God's mind. That is such a silly, I mean, I understand. I don't want to call people silly, but it's a silly way of looking at things. So God decided something, he knows best. You're going to go tell him what you think and ask him to change your mind, his mind? It's ridiculous. What are you saying? Please change your mind? You don't think he knows? Prayer doesn't change God's mind. Prayer changes the person. Prayer is basically a way of raising the person that you're no longer the guy that was sitting in the waiting room 10 minutes ago. For that guy, maybe the result would have been no good. But now, I'm a different guy. A, the prayer itself lifts you. You're thankful, you're appreciative. And plus, during your prayers, Hashem, I need to get better. I'm going to become this. I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to become more tanua, more modest. I'm going to learn more. I'm going to be more committed to watch my mouth. I'm going to be... Wow. In 20 minutes, the guy, different guy, the guy in the headphones didn't change one thing about him. He's the audio tape guy, and nothing's happening. He's sitting there. What does he have to worry about? It's all good. But this guy who's afraid, he's not afraid of the doctor. He's not afraid of the surgery. He's not afraid of. He's afraid of the results that are controlled by Hashem. Who knows it's all good. But he also knows that the good is dependent on where he is. That's why on Rosh Hashanah we say, Malchiyot, Hashem is the Melech, he runs the world. But then after we say Zichronot, he runs the world by looking at you. By seeing where you are, that's how he is with you. So now the fear, what kind of fear you have? The fear you have is not from the doctors, nothing like that. Like Yaakov Avinu, it says when he saw Esav was coming towards him, Vayira Yaakov Me'od. Yaakov was afraid. Yaakov was not a Baal Bitahon. What's he afraid of? He was afraid that maybe that his zechut, his merit, is not going to lead to the best result. It will be the best based on where he is now. But if he had zechut that is greater, there'll be a new best, a better best. He's afraid. Being afraid in such moments of life, either very big ones or smaller ones, makes a person a greater person. And if he uses bitahon in that moment, I met a guy a few years ago, had a very hard year, very, very hard year. Not important what it was, a very, very hard year. And I'm seeing the guy through the year, and if you ask me now, we never know. You never know. But based on at least external, looks to me like the guy started the year, ended the year, the same guy. He went through a very hard year. But I didn't see that the guy made any recognizable changes, at least. That's it. So I'm talking to him. He tells me, I didn't ask him. He says, you know what got me through this year? What got you through here? He says, all day I'm listening to bitahon classes. Now, no question one should listen to bitahon classes to give them the strength during difficult time. But I worry that maybe all those bitahon classes was like giving him some
painkillers.
And putting to sleep his much needed fear of upgrading himself. He's getting so much bitahon They're not worried anymore. So again, bitachon in itself is a great accomplishment. So I don't want to take that away from anybody. God forbid. But we have to make sure this line is clear. That while Hashem does all for the best, but your merit, your cup makes a difference of what's called the best. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Yom Ira, the day that I am afraid, Ani Elecha Eftah. That's when I come have bitachon in you. Fear and bitachon are not a contradiction. If you fear the doctor, that's against bitachon. If you fear anything but God, it's against bitachon. But fear of Him, that's not against bitachon. The opposite. Yom Ira. The day I'm afraid, Ani Elecha Eftah. I run to you. When I'm afraid, I run to you. I'm running from you to you. Because I know that you're the one that put me in this mess. So I'm running from you, meaning from my level that I'm on now. So I'm running away from you based on that level. And where am I running? To you. To raise myself that I could be near you. Belohim batahti loira. Because I have bitachon Hashem, I'm not afraid. Ma ya'aseh basar li. I'm not afraid of what humans are going to do to me. That's not a fear. I'm not afraid of anything in the physical world. I'm afraid of you. Because I know you're in control. And I know how you decide things. And I know it's based on my cup, so I'm trying to, the fear is to make my cup bigger. So you'll do the best for me in the best way that I can handle. It's very important, Nekuda. That's a healthy fear of God. It makes a person go through a year of difficulty, but come out a different person. Bitachon doesn't mean just keep sleeping, because everything is good. It's realizing how the goodness of Hashem works. That's the way throughout Tanakh we find that great people, even in the Shas, we see people were afraid. They didn't have merit. They had fear of God. Just one last point. One might ask, what? Okay, so that helps. If I'm going through troubles, okay. If I'm going through difficulty, I don't know what's going to be. So I need to upgrade myself so that I will be deserving of something greater. But how does that work if I'm waiting in the room for somebody else? What's going to happen to him is him. What's that do with me? What am I praying for him for? Or what am I upgrading myself? What is upgrading me have to do with his results? Pasuk says, El emuna ve'en avel. Hashem is a God of emuna. The word emuna encompasses many, many beautiful things, which means Hashem is honest, Hashem is sincere, Hashem is faithful, Hashem never turns away from someone that he's supposed to be turning. He never disappoints. His emunah is all good. El emunah ve'en avel. And he's not evil. So the famous question that's asked, what an inappropriate follow-up on El emunah. You say this guy is the most trustworthy, the most faithful, the most, and he's not evil. Not evil. Of course he's not evil. How could you be El Emunah and be evil? You could say a guy is not evil if you say, you know, this guy is always stealing, he's always robbing, but he's not an evil guy. He's not evil. Whatever, he has a big yetzer, he's not evil. Then you could say that. But you can't start El Emunah in the highest level and then say he's not evil. It's So what's the answer to that question? So the answer is that in this world, it's possible to be a person who is emuna, but yet evil at the same time. It's possible to have emuna, to be in the iman, and yet be evil. Mashal, story. Man murders in the open. Cameras, eyewitnesses, clear. You went and killed people. Murder. They took him to the court. The defense had nothing to say. The judge says, okay, guilty, life sentence. Some lady in the back comes running, screaming, you evil judge, you're an evil man. It wasn't a more clear case. In this case, you can't understand what could even be the question. Call me evil. So he says to her, lady, who are you? She says, your honor, I am the wife of this man here that you just put to a life sentence. He says, I understand that he did something very bad, and I understand he deserves to be punished.
You?
He says, but I have me and my 10 children. He says, what did I do to deserve that I should lose my husband?
Yeah.
What did my children do to deserve losing their father? You're an evil person. Look what evil you caused innocent people like me and my children. The judge is stunned. What's the answer to that question? There really, on this planet, there is no answer to that question. That's the way it is. There's nothing we could do. You're right. I'm sorry, lady. My intention isn't to hurt you. Sorry, but it is what it is. The only way in this world to carry judgment is the way I'm doing it. So in this world, you could be an emunah judge. You could be a judge of emunah, but he's still avel. He did emunah to one and avel to others. But in God's court, Hashem is el emunah ve'en avel. What does that mean practically? It means that Hashem could say, okay, this guy, he needs Avraham. It's time for him to go. Based on his circumstance, based on where he is, that's the best thing. Oh, okay. And now, before they let him go, they have to see how many people are connected to this guy that's going to be affected by his loss.
Ooh.
So they go and they scout out all his circle. And they see, oh, that guy. They say, okay, look at this guy, his son. Okay, yeah, he deserves it too. Good, next. His daughter, okay, good. It's good, makes sense. Lamedo, if there's one guy in his circle, one, that will be affected and doesn't deserve that pain, whatever it might be, Hashem will save the guy because of it. That's why many great people, they always try to be needed as much as possible by as many people as possible. Because the more people that need you, it's like a life insurance. Because they need you so no matter what judgment is on you, they have to think about them first.
What?
El emunah ve'en avel. They take everybody in consideration. That's why the Gemara says, if somebody from your habura, from your group, is suffering, and you're affected by it, the guy died, or the guy's sick, and you know, tid'a kol habura. Everyone in that group should worry. Why should I worry? Because he got sick. I should worry because he died. Yeah, because if you're hurting from that, you also must have not had zichut. So you should worry too. So that's why when you pray for others who you care about and you're in pain, that person's survival, maybe he deserves it for himself, but they also took in consideration his loved ones and others who care about him. And if they see that they all don't have the zechut, so then he goes. But if you yourself, one guy praying, one guy out of 100 guys praying, if he becomes higher and no longer deserving of such a pain that comes from that guy's death or that guy's situation, whatever, it doesn't have to be death, then that person will be saved because of you. So it's very important when you pray for someone that you actually, care about them. Because when you care about them, so the deen is including you also. And therefore, by raising yourself, you could save the guy's life. He doesn't have the merit, maybe, to continue. But because of you, you save them. Your upgrade has saved his life. This is the situation. Again, review. Hag HaSukkot is a time where we feel Hashem's love from the Anane Kavod of our lives, the donuts of our lives. That brings us to a life of bitahon, takes us through the year. When we feel loved, we see Hashem's love, we have total bitahon on Him. But not to make a mistake, that bitahon means I'm never afraid. I'm never afraid of people. I'm never afraid of anything. I'm only afraid of Hashem. And when situations are scary, I should be afraid. Afraid of Hashem. And my goal is to upgrade myself so I can have the merit to be in the best of the best. I don't want to just, Hashem, do the best. I want the best of the best. I don't want a best based on where I am. I want a best where I'm going to be.